So, do we want hot inflation data? I mean, look at the market's reaction on Tuesday. We went down and right back up. We're holding the gains. Street leaning long into this report at 8:35. We're up nicely near all-time highs. We'll get Mark Chaikin on at 8:15 a.m. to get his outlook on the markets. U.S. Steel, man, take the money and run. It's Thursday. It's pre-market prep. Let's fire up.
Welcome to Benzinga's pre-market prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
All right, good morning, traders and investors. As I said, we are up almost 17 handles at 42, 49 and a quarter. In order to post a new all-time closing high, just above 52, 41 and a quarter. That would do it. The buck is up a nickel, 102, 45. That will surely move off the inflation data. Bonds flat at 120 and a quarter. Crude over 80 bucks, up 62 cents, 80.34. Gold taking a breather, down at 940, working on an inside day at 21.7140. Silver over 25 bucks, going the opposite way. Bitcoin, that's down $445 at 73,470. Dennis, let's bring in Triple T here. And, you know, I mean, I know this is news from yesterday, but I mean, take the money and run this X deal. I mean, come on.
We talk about this all the time. When you have an administration that is tough on deals and you get these merger pops, don't sit around waiting for the last couple of bucks. Don't sit around, you know, thinking, well, you know, it's leaked a little bit here. There's $3-4 on the table when there's $20 of downside. You've got to be very careful when you're trading risk arbitrage and M&A deals. I never waited for the last couple of bucks. You know, I never would hold a deal. Like if you pop 20 bucks, and we're talking about US Steel, when you'd pop $20, you know, because it was like $26, $27, and it's $50 and they've got the announced deal. Those are selling opportunities because there is a lot of times it seems like that the deals take longer to happen. There's time value of money to consider. And then there's the consideration that, hey, the deal might not go through. Well, now you have the Biden administration coming in here. It was a foreign company buying U.S. Steel. We talked about this one. If you go back to that show, which would have been on
several shows.
After the deal was announced, it would have been December the 18th. We talked about that. I mean, foreign company buying United States Steel, the name even, you know, United States, and going to take it away. Probably going to be some antitrust concerns here. Well, here you go, administration, Biden, looking like, bring an AB here.
I will say, though, Dennis, I mean, it definitely with this administration, you've definitely seen it with this administration, but we have talked about this for long before Biden was in.
Yes.
I mean, it's just.
That's not just a Biden thing.
Let's bring in AB.
Would Trump have blocked it? I mean, this is United States.
I think
Trump is going to be the same way on this thing. Like letting, you know, a foreign corporation come in and buy United States Steel, probably going to have an issue with that. So it was kind of obvious. The obvious trade was selling it when you had, you know, obviously it's taken 2.5 months to fall apart here. But now it has. Yeah. So the official headline here, Aaron.
So the official headline was just that Biden. Yeah. Like you guys mentioned, Biden's administration announced some concerns over this deal that they might step in and try and block it. And like, I mean, we talked about this when the deal came out and you guys are mentioning it. I mean, the name U.S. Steel, it's been around since 1901.
Yeah.
You know, it's in Pittsburgh. It's like this like Rust Belt type thing. And it's, I don't think that's a good, it's just not good optics to be selling, you know, one of your companies like this to a foreign country. And obviously Japan's, you know, we're allies with Japan. It's friendly. It's not like China or Russia's coming in and buying it, but either way, you don't want like a sign of a strong economy. I don't think you want your biggest industrial company selling out to a foreign country. So either way, I mean, you're seeing the stock get hit here. You know, we mentioned Cleveland Cliffs CEO was talking about the deal as well. Cleveland Cliffs, I think, reported
Let's talk about moving forward now, Dennis, because in AB, because there are other people kicking the tires, right? But we don't know what price. Cleveland Cliffs was one to be rumored here. So, man, has it fallen? I don't know if it's fallen enough, though, because it wasn't originally when they talked about this. It was a heck of a lot lower, right? It got a couple bumps. Yeah, Dennis, actually, it was at 25 when they started kicking the tires. Yeah. Then it went to 30. Then it went to 40. Then it went to – and just think about U.S. Steel, too. I mean, you ever looked at their earnings table? They're
very
so
cyclical. So
yeah.
Cyclical.
Yep.
Yeah. Lots to chew
down more.
Lots to chew on here. You're correct, Joel. There was a lot of suitors. I can remember the Cleveland Cliffs CEO being interviewed on CNBC after the Nippon. I think we're saying it right, Nippon. You actually looked at the phonetics and you said it was Nippon, but spelled Nippon. So I'm going to call it Nippon Steel. After Nippon deal was announced, they interviewed the Cleveland Cliffs, a couple days later and said, "Are you guys, still interested? Are you going to Trump?" He's like, "We would be interested," he said, "but at a much lower price." Because what was the deal price for the Nippon? Was it 53? I'm going to memory, folks.
Yeah. I think
53, it got up to 50. But in any regard, the Cleveland Cliffs CEO said at a much lower price. What does that mean? Does that mean 45? Does that mean 43? This thing comes down a little bit further. Do they get interested again? There were other potential suitors here too. Another foreign company, and I don't know if a foreign one's going to come in now, with ArcelorMittal, now that they're seeing, that this deal is going to get blocked. Is MT going to go take a run at it? Probably not, but they were a suitor originally as well. So I think the most likely suitor, if Nippon deal fails, is Cleveland Cliffs. The question is, at what price? So I think as U.S. Steel falls, let's say it comes down, it's $38 here. So it was 25 when the deal got announced, but steel stocks have climbed since then. The market has climbed. I would think U.S. Steel is 30 with no deal. So we're just estimating. We know nothing. But, if it was to get killed, it's reasonable to assume that the stock price would have been up a little bit from here because the entire steel market is higher. Steel Dynamics, to Spinner's point, is near highs. Nucor is near highs. They've come up since the deal was announced. So in its natural, company fundamentals, it probably is up to 30 with no deal. So it's 38.82 today. So you're kind of risking $8, hoping the deal doesn't get done. So I'd say, 13 or 14 up, 7 or 8 down. I'd love it at 35, and you'd really get those metrics, in your favor then, where you've got like 20 up and 5 down. I like that better. So as the stock falls, it gets more interesting. So I'm kind of interested at 38.82. I'd be really interested in a 35.
It was 55, Dennis. Yeah, I'm looking.
The deal was 55.
Yeah, and just look at.
I can't buy 55.
Yeah, and look at the way, too, also the price. I mean, I'd taken my eye off this, but the day that it was announced at 55, it hit 50.20, and then it never saw the $50 handle. So people were ringing this register. They didn't care about the other $5, $6, $7. Yeah. And then it kind of wavered, it's not much of a trend because it was trending down. And then the 2 days before this happened, it was down and then kaplooey. Let's let the dust settle a little bit here. A lot of air on the downside here. We'll see what happens with U.S. Steel.
So my summary is I think there's some value here, and I think the M&A action is interesting in the 30s. So I wouldn't be selling. If I was in it now, I wouldn't be selling at 38.62 because I think Cleveland Cliffs could come back and maybe that price is in the 40s. But I'm not jumping right away here. I'd love it, if that deal actually got killed and the thing went down to like 33, 34, and then Cleveland Cliffs came in as the rescue. That's the perfect scenario. Under 35, I think it's a buy. But you're a little bit high here yet. So, and again, it could just snap back. Maybe the deal doesn't get blocked. But again, to Aaron's point, U.S. Steel, named since 1901, they're going to fight this thing.
And I would think, just looking at the numbers, I would think that U.S. Steel would have to fall a decent amount before Cleveland Cliffs is even able to acquire it. They're basically trading at the same market cap right now, right around $10 billion. So we will see there. Other news, we had some earnings this morning. Before we get into those, Got to talk about some other news from last night. Fisker, ticker FSR, potential bankruptcy. Stock went down about 40%. We've talked a lot about themes on this show. Of course, AI trade been hot. Weight loss trade been hot. EVs has been the exact opposite. You know, Tesla week again this morning. So EVs just might have gotten we might have gotten a little bit too ahead of ourselves, a little bit too much, too fast. But Fisker, again, one of these companies that was in this growth stage with the higher interest rates, not a great environment for the company, but struggling here. And yeah, potential bankruptcy. Maybe there'll be a acquisition or a company coming in to rescue Fisker as well.
It's the hybrids too. We're just at this point here now where Toyota's figuring it out. You know, everybody's moving more to hybrid. Hybrid technology has been out there a long time, but it's kind of like you're not ready to give up your gas-guzzling car. You don't know where you're going to charge. We got the best of both worlds here. You get some benefits of electric, but you can still, you know, gas up your car, you know, in a crunch. So it's tough with hybrids. This is what's really doing a number here on the EV stocks. And then the valuations were all extreme. Tesla stock is a mess. I sold some of mine yesterday. You got to admit when you're wrong. And, you know, I thought, you know, the bot story might get hot. I just recently bought some stock and I sold more than the stock that I just bought here. So, I mean, it's looking ugly on the charts. The EVs are a mess. Fisker was a great story in 2021 and it just went, you know,
one car. They got one
just
car.
Went cold.
What car?
Well, it's not even, it's just the prices of the cars, Joel. It's really expensive. They're really expensive. People aren't willing to pay what they need to pay. And then they're not profitable. You know, once figured out profitability is Tesla off of this. Is Mark in the background? You want to bring Mark into this conversation?
Is he here early?
Yeah, he's here early. So why don't we just
bring him in.
Yeah, bring him in because I know he's got thoughts on the EV market here too. So I see him in the background. Let's bring in Mark.
EVs are dead, guys.
It seems that way, doesn't it, Mark? You know, and we knew valuation was always a problem here. Like we were on this show, you know, when Lucid came out IPO and Rivian came out IPO. Lucid was $50 and I gave it a $5 price target because it just the value wasn't there. But I mean, now it's like even when the Tesla's hurting this much, you got to think all these other companies are in like, they might be in trouble. Like we actually might see Fisker might be the tip of the iceberg. We may see bankruptcies all over the place in this industry. Thoughts here, yeah, Mark?
The demand isn't there. The valuations were sky high, but except for the U.S. government mandating mileage targets in, I guess, what is it, 2040, 2035, there is no demand for this. And the more extreme weather you see, the more people realize that you can't survive with an electric vehicle in a 18-foot snowstorm or in a heat wave where you can't turn on your air conditioning. So I think it's a dead horse right here.
What about Tesla? Because Tesla has found a way to be profitable in this environment. Tesla, I believe, is going to survive. Tesla's working on a lot of other things as well. But I mean, the valuation here is nosebleed here too. I bought some recently and now I just sold the stock recently because I thought it was getting a little bit of help. I've been talking about the humanoid story, which is a really cool story, but it's too far away. What do you think of Tesla?
I don't like it. I love the technology, the battery charging capability, but I think it's a $100 stock in a market that's not euphoric, but we are euphoric. So maybe going up. Hard to imagine what would move the stock higher. And you know, there are so many areas of the market that are moving higher. People are looking for money to put to work, and Tesla's a source of funds.
That's a good point too.
But I mean, long term, Mark, do you think there will be a time where some of these EV companies are doing well? Do you think this transition is still going to happen? Or is this just this story, you know, over for now until we see some changes?
Well, it's over for now. I think hybrid was always the right answer, except for the government stepping in with subsidies and with mileage targets. But I read a study about 6 months ago that said that the carbon footprint all in is as good with hybrids or better than, because of the cost of production and the mechanisms of production, the battery and so forth. So I think hybrid is an answer. Toyota's been there with the hybrid forever, but now you're going to have GM back with a hybrid, and they still haven't figured out how to dispose of the batteries, by the way. I mean, that's a serious problem. On the flat-out EVs, there's nobody really knows. It's sort of like nuclear waste. They'll figure it out when they have to, but it's not a good thing. So,
and then the lifespan.
We got a lot of good stuff. Pardon?
What's the lifespan of those batteries? Like, I was seeing stories, you know, after 10 years, the Tesla battery is so expensive to replace. Some people are saying you just scrap the car. I'm not sure if 10 years is the number, if that was just something on the internet. Like, do we know what the lifespan is of these batteries?
I think someone does, but I don't.
Yeah.
I think that the bigger issue is the cost of repairs and the insurance is just skyrocketing now. It's just not a pretty picture, but there's so many areas in the market that are pretty pictures. Let's talk about where you make money here.
Let's do it. Well, what do you like, Mark?
I like cybersecurity because when you see what happened to the medical community with the hack at United Health subsidiary, it's in disarray. I've talked to my doctor a couple of times a month just to check in on the medical side as well as the health. Doctors were not getting paid. The doctors still aren't getting paid. The system is not up and running. So you need cybersecurity to protect our ever-increasing electronic payments mechanism, to forget about the electric grid and, you name it. Cybersecurity is the growth industry of the next decade.
So, Mark,
there's a half dozen companies to pick from here, Mark. Sorry, Aaron. There's a half dozen companies. Which ones, like, you go Palo Alto, you go CrowdStrike, you go Zscaler, there's so many. Which one would you go with?
My favorite is CrowdStrike because it's the purest play. Palo Alto Network is a hybrid because it's part cybersecurity and it's part equipment. And so they get caught up in the capital expenditure cycles. I also think Fortinet as a rebound candidate is coming back again. But CrowdStrike is my absolute favorite in that space.
I was going to ask about SentinelOne, which reported last night, ticker S, and the earnings were a little bit disappointing, stock trading down about 8%. Is this one that you would come in and potentially buy the dip on, Mark?
It does not have a bullish rating in the power gauge. It did, but the rating turned neutral about 2 weeks ago. So something or someone had a sense that was happening. And shaken money flow has actually been negative for the last 2 months. So I'd say that the smart money was selling the strength here ahead of the earnings, in spite of the fact that price targets are being raised across the board. So you've got Bernstein raising price target, Morgan Stanley. I don't think I'd buy the dip in this one.
What exactly goes into that power gauge rating? I mean, you can just give us the Spark Notes. I'm more of a Spark Notes guy myself. And yeah, I know you don't want to give the whole secret sauce, but just give me a little bit more of an idea of how you come up with this gauge.
Well, the secret sauce are the weightings. We're very transparent about the factors, but three of the factors relate to earnings. Earnings surprise. So we look back at 5 quarters to see if there's a pattern of positive or negative earnings surprises. Analyst estimate revisions, and that's a big deal because that's the biggest short-term driver of stock prices. And that goes back to the 80s when I was at Drexel Burnham. They were doing that research. And then analyst opinion changes. So are they moving from bullish to neutral because of valuations and so forth? So 15% of the power gauge is very dynamic. That has to do with what is going on right now in the marketplace. 15% technical, and the rest are fundamental factors. So it's a really dynamic gauge, particularly when you combine it with shaken money flow. And people can get shaken money flow anywhere on stockcharts.com or any of the online platforms. You combine a quantitative model with real-world monitoring of smart money, and you have a pretty potent combination. Joel smiling. What's what, Joel?
No. Aaron, did you have a follow? Oh, that was from before. No, Mark. Well, we're on the line with Mark Chaykin. Chaykin Analytics joins our show every other Thursday to discuss the markets fundamentally and technically. Just overall market, you've been bullish. Anything you see out here in the market concerning? I mean, we want a hot PPI number, right? Because the CPI was hot. We rallied 55 handles. Anything you see out there concerning, or is it just blue skies, clear skies ahead for the market?
Well, except for one disturbing pattern. But by the way, the PPI is very, very correlated with the Chinese economy. And so I'd be surprised if you got a hot number because okay. The Chinese economy is still soft. But there's a pattern that's known as the hockey stick pattern that we're starting to see in a lot of popular stocks. And that, from a very short-term point of view, is disturbing. So whether you're looking at Robinhood, Coinbase, SMCI, NVIDIA, just to give you four names that we've been using as examples, these hockey stick patterns, Dennis, we're going to let you talk about them because you're sure. Canadian. look at them. That is the blade of the hockey stick.
That looks like the Wayne Gretzky stick right there.
Yeah. So those patterns never end well. You can go back to 1973-4. You can go back to 2000. You can go back to 2008 with the financials. So that's the only fly in the ointment right now. But that's a short-term, sort of irrational exuberance example. Be mindful that Alan Greenspan coined the phrase irrational exuberance.
Oh, yeah, a long time ago.
The middle of 1996. Now, people thought he coined it, right up near the top. He coined it roughly 3.5 years before the top.
He was early. So,
yeah, these things can go on a long time. He was very
That's a
early.
Good little factoid right there. I didn't realize he was early. They give him a lot of credit, the irrational exuberance. But if we did it in 1996, the market didn't pop till March of 2000. So you're right. He was 4 years early. And the market went up a lot after that. So there is the other saying, the market can stay irrational much longer than you can stay solvent here.
You Mark, bet.
So thoughts, let's move away from the tech sector for a while here, because we've actually seen some strength broadening out. Yep. There's been the industrials, just quietly a lot of them making new highs, some of your cyclical stocks coming around, oil coming around here. Let's talk some other sectors. What else do you like?
I like specialty retailers. I think Target is going to lead the way to much better performance. Obviously, the earnings on Target were a blowout, and fortunately, it's starting to pull back a little. This is a stock I would definitely buy on a pullback. It's really turned it around. And you've got a lot of other specialty retailers and clothing manufacturers that are starting to turn around. So I'm looking at Ralph Lauren, and the reason is it's such a good brand. And if and when China turns around, the demand for luxury goods will improve. And it's a stock that, again, reported a better than expected earnings, and it's consolidating, but it's finally got a bullish rating in Chaykin right now. So, there's a whole, retailing runs the gamut from $500 million market cap companies to the big guys like Walmart. But in between, there are some specialty names that look interesting to me. And then construction equipment and engineering, huge. In an election year, they're going to be announcing a lot of infrastructure projects. Wouldn't surprise me to see.
Who you like? Give us some stocks. Give us some stocks in that
area. EME. EME is just knocking it out of the park, consolidating. Yeah. Fix, which my wife Sandy has owned for the last year and a half. It's engineering, air conditioning engineering. So there's a stock that's starting to pull back. And the suppliers, Owens Corning. But that gets you more into the home builder. I'm more interested in the companies that are going to benefit from infrastructure build out over the next 3 years. And I can guarantee you that you're going to see many headlines that either the Democratic administration, Harris or Biden, is in some small town in Kentucky talking about a new project that they've just funded. And, that's election year politics, but it's also real money being spent on the ground. So another one is Mastech, MZ, I think it's MZT.
Let me see. I haven't looked at that in a while.
My partner, Pete Parmesino, loves MTZ. Yeah, I mean, these are all construction-related, engineering-related companies that are going to benefit. There's a lot of waste removal activity, nuclear waste removal. And there are a couple of companies, Republic benefits from that. They're mostly garbage removal. I remember that was at one time Bill Gates Foundation's largest position. Got to find the symbol on that. Was that RSG or?
Yes, RSG is Republic Services.
Yeah. That's waste removal.
Oh, trash. Yeah, waste management's been doing well too.
But it's also
really well.
It's also remediation. Barron's had a story about this industry over the weekend. And so it's remediation, not just of nuclear waste, but of toxic waste all around the country. So there's a lot of infrastructure plays that, you know, are far afield from AI and cybersecurity, but AI is not going away. This is a serious revolution and leading to productivity. If you ever doubt the valuations, and you should, on AI stocks, because, you know, trees don't grow to the sky, just think productivity and what this is going to mean for productivity for the next 10 years. IBM just announced a layoff of untold thousands of people in their marketing area.
Don't need it.
They're increasing. Yeah. Bots are doing
bots,
it.
And bots do it.
So, yeah, and IBM's really a favorite. I call that my sleeper AI stock because they were the first, you know, commercial AI product with Watson. And then someone said, well, all they did was beat a chess master. Well, that's not all they did, but they didn't create the buzz that NVIDIA and Google created. And then my final name there is, as a laggard, is Google. It's been a disappointment. It was in our AI portfolio. The power gauge is neutral right now, but you've got to believe that with Sergey Brin back in the company and not happy about some of these misses on the regenerative AI product, that there are going to be some changes at Google. And right now, change can only help Google because they're, you know, they're under a little bit of a cloud.
All right, Mark, we're up against the clock here. We have the PPI data coming in momentarily. Enjoy your comments on the market. We'll be dialing you up. Mark Chaykin, Chaykin Analytics here on Pre-Market Prep.
And Joel, you're always looking for support levels, 1.5 to 3%. We still haven't broken the 21-day rise.
I know. We were looking back before, and it got nowhere near that area. I know.
It will.
I know.
It will. It will.
Okay. But all right, Mark. Thank
can't
you.
Tell you when. Be well, guys. Always a pleasure.
Thank See you, Mark.
All right, guys, again, that was Mark Chaykin. Chaykin Analytics, always great to catch up with Mark every other Thursday on Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. We're 2 minutes away from PPI data, and like we talked about before the show, if Tuesday's any indication, then if it's slightly hot, that'll be good news for the market. If it's slightly cool, then that'll probably still be good news
for the market.
Yeah, I don't know. We just probably don't.
And remember, you know, you're going to be watching one TLT for the lie detector test. Two, IWM is going to move more off of it, meaning a hot number, that's what gets hit hard. A cool number, IWM rallies more. S&P is like your hybrid. You know, we're just talking hybrid. You got lots of technology in there, but you've got some other stuff in there too. So the effects, you know, are more muted because what happens is, when the number is too hot, they hammer the IWM, but they're like, oh my gosh, we got to go back to the AI trade. So remember, all these rotations that we have happened that happened on Tuesday are going to happen here again. So keep an eye on all those rotations. They're very important. I'm going wide. It's 40 seconds away. It's not going to move like the CPI, but it's going to move.
I'm going to switch things up, and I don't know if this is going to mess me up, but I brought up the 30-year bond. That's the equivalent of the TLT, so I don't have the technical levels on that as well as the S&Ps, but Dennis always comes out and says, hey, you see with the TLT, well, there's your bonds up there, S&Ps trading up 17.5 handles, 53.50 at your pre-market high. That means absolutely nothing to me. What the number is, the all-time high June contract, 52.57 and a quarter. That's just a smidgen away. On the downside, never saw that closing price from yesterday at 32.50. First reaction is down in both the bonds and the S&Ps. A little bit of a dip here. I don't know if the official numbers are out, but once again, a dip.
PPI for February comes in at 0.6% versus 0.3% estimate. That's doubled month over month. Retail sales came in at 0.6% versus 0.8% expected, so slightly cool there. Core PPI for February month over month came in at 0.3% versus 0.2% estimate. So slightly
it's a hot number.
The PPI core year over year came in at 2% versus the 1.9% estimated. USA initial jobless claims. I know this is a lot, guys. We'll recap this in a second. Jobless claims comes in at 209,000 versus 218,000 estimate. So slightly cool there on the jobless claims. Which is really hot.
Going unchanged here momentarily. Yeah, I mean, so it was double. It was double, right? 0.3 estimate, and it was 0.6. It was double.
Yep.
You know, I mean, the first year.
These are flat out hot numbers.
Yeah, I mean, come on. But we're still green on the session. Look at that. We're still up 11 handles.
It's very impressive. The resilience in this market is very impressive here. I would have thought it would get hit harder on this. IWM has been hit a little bit, but not that much. We were up. We've dropped to 0.4%. PPI X food and energy was up 3% over 2. So food and energy, maybe energy, they're going to say, you know, was the main cause here. They're always trying to find a reason to still buy stocks. I think this puts you back into the tech trade, Joel. I mean, I think you sell some other stuff, but, you know, again, that only lasted a day or two. I think there's going to be rotation here that keeps us alive, though.
Yeah, I mean, what does this do to the old dot plot, you know? I mean, where does this put us now? I'm not going to be the one calling for interest rate hikes, but I mean, the street is so leading towards lower rates. This is not any indication that we're going to be getting an interest rate cut soon. I mean, you got to look at the tea leaves, and they're saying, yeah, that rates are stable. I'm not saying they're going up, but man, if you had to flip a coin with the inflation data that we're getting, it's not good. You know, we've had a great run. But there you go, PPI moving the market.
Yeah, and I mean, again, we talked about this on Tuesday. That is the number, you know, hot, but not hot enough to require rate hikes and maybe. And that's, you know, I would think we would have to see a continuation of this trend of like a couple months of beating of hot inflation data coming in. And hotter than, you know, the Tuesday one was very slight. This
double?
One seems
this is a double.
This one seems double. Yeah, this one seems more significant. So if we continue to see reports like today's, then I think those rate hikes could be on the table. But right now, and we'll look at how the bond traders.
There's no rate hikes on the table, Aaron. I know you were saying that yesterday. They're not at a hiking spot here.
Right.
We're not. We're not at a hiking spot.
If we continue to get PPI data that's double,
I don't think so. I think we're done with the hiking cycle, so I completely disagree with that. And you're entitled to your opinion, but it's bad enough that we're not going to be lowering anytime soon. So all I think these numbers do is it kicks the can down the road. So maybe we don't cut in June, which is not good for, you know, IWM, for your solar stocks. Like, let's go take a look at solar here, Joel. What's that doing? It's slow to respond.
Yeah,
down, though. ENPH down. SEDG down. But yeah,
I'm saying if the PPI and CPI continues to rise, so CPI is say at 3% right now, say it gets to 4% in 3 months, you still think no chance at all they talk about raising a quarter percent?
Well, if you're talking that we're going to start really ramping up inflation, yeah. I mean, if inflation is going to go crazy again, I don't think it's going to though. Like, I don't think we're at that point. I think this number here, these numbers, as they continue to come in slightly hot, just kick the can down the road.
Right.
It's like we're not going in June. Yeah. Now we're going in September. But I mean, that's bad for stocks too, AB. That's not good. Like if you're long IWM, you need those rate cuts. You know, you need those rate cuts. So I think, you know, as we continue to see these numbers, it's a little bit hot. And it's not like we're not smoking, but 0.6, you can say, well, it's double. You know, major media might say, oh, it's twice as much, but you're still talking 0.3. You're still talking X food and energy 0.1.
Yeah.
Is it enough for the Fed to start thinking about hiking rates? I don't think so. I think the Fed just thinks maybe we're too early to go in June. Maybe we got to start thinking about September. And I don't think we're at that point yet, but that would be the concern. Not so much that they're going to raise rates, but that they're going to kick the
ticket down the road.
Yeah, I think I totally agree.
I totally agree. Well,
I talked about this a lot on my afternoon show when the Fed started raising rates. But historically, higher rates hasn't been that bad for stocks, because typically when we have higher rates, you also have strong economic conditions. And when the economic conditions start weakening, recession, that's when they start cutting. So in and of itself, 5% interest rates or whatever we're at now isn't necessarily a bad thing, as long as it's coupled with a strong economy. And we haven't really seen the economy start to weaken. So that's really, you know, if they're not talking about cutting and we start to see if inflation data started slowing down to the point where like deflation was on the table, then I'd start to be really worried. But right now, as long as the economy is doing well and we're not talking about raising, then I think it's a fine environment for stocks. Not all stocks, to your point, Dennis, because it's still not good for these small cap companies that maybe aren't profitable or need to borrow money. But again, I mean, as long as the economy stays strong right now, I don't think I have any reason to be super bearish on the overall market.
And to your point here, the market is not selling off.
It's
that
weird.
Part of
yeah, I know.
We're
look at this.
Holding up fairly well. If you would have told me we were going to come in hot again, that, you know, and we're getting jobless claims here too. Jobless claims coming out here as well. So Aaron will give you that number just while I finish my point. But if you would have told me we're going to come in and be three ticks hotter than what the estimates were, I would have said we're going to go red. We went red on the IWM, but the SPY is just resilient. But it's not NVIDIA holding it up here. I mean, NVIDIA has continued to leak here. I would have thought, you know, maybe NVIDIA actually could turn around on something like this, because the AI trade works no matter what, inflationary or not inflationary. But we're not seeing that. We're seeing kind of support here. I mean, IWM is only down 0.1%.
I know.
Like, that's impressive off this number.
But you know what's different is, like, when it went, we'll see what happens. Obviously, we're just hovering here at the all-time closing high price of 42.41. It's a different, we had like a really hard dip, right, before, and it was scooped up. This is just like, it was sharp enough. People are just like, oh man, I got jammed short overnight. This is coming in a little bit. I'm hanging out, but we'll see. Hanging out just around mid-range on the session. So right now, even with that hot number, bulls maintaining a bid here at 838.
Strength, man.
Yeah, and we did. I did mention those jobless claims number, Dennis. We had 209,000 initial jobless claims versus 218,000. So it was slightly less than expected on the jobless claims, but I think the market cares a lot more about the PPI numbers this morning than it does the jobless claims. But yeah, we're either way from the jobless claims, we're not seeing this big ramp up in layoffs, or at least people then going out and filing after those layoffs, which that's what, you know, a lot of people talked about that a year and a half ago, and we saw a lot of the big tech companies that it wasn't reflected in the jobless claims because a lot of these people laid off from the tech companies didn't need to go file for unemployment. You know, right away they had enough money. So, Mark talked about the IBM layoffs and this stuff, but we're not seeing the labor market really slowing down.
Yeah, the jobless claims are okay. And then the retail sales was a little bit lighter. So it is what it is, but let's do some more earnings here.
Yeah. Let's get into earnings. Yeah. We had some this morning. Different story for Dollar General than for Dollar Tree. We had Dollar Tree yesterday, which was trading down 10%, announced it's closing 1,000 stores. Didn't look like it was doing too hot. But I guess it's not the case for all dollar stores, because Dollar General reported strong earnings this morning. GAAP EPS, $1.83, beat the $1.76 estimate. Sales came in at $9.85 billion, beat the $9.78 billion. Stock trade higher this morning. We talked about the bar was set a little bit lower for Dollar General after Dollar Tree yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to report earnings and they're going to be disappointing, you definitely don't want to go first, because when you go second, the bar immediately lowers for you. And Dollar Tree got hammered yesterday, so everybody's expecting the worst from Dollar General, and it's not that bad. It's funny, just simplistic little things like that. If you're going to report blowout earnings, you want to report first, because then you've set the bar too high for your direct competitor here. So, you know, you take the numbers at face value. You know, it was Dollar General, $1.83, $1.76, beat and beat. Net sales growth, they're pretty good numbers. But the guidance, fiscal year earnings 24 were 6.80 to 7.55. Analyst estimates were up at 7.55. So that looks like, you know, we may hit the numbers, but we may miss the numbers to me. So it doesn't sound that great. And then Dollar Tree, if we just look and compare, you know, at the apples to the apples from yesterday, there was a miss and a miss. So they flat out missed. But I don't think the Dollar General guidance has got great here either. It's just Dollar Tree set the bar really low, to your point, Aaron.
Boy, you did get a nice pop off it. In the right now, one your pre-market high comes in at 169, and I'll just go to your next monthly high, and your next monthly high is just above that at 170.46. That was back in August. So based on the monthlies, that would be a next target on the upside. If you're looking for a gap fill, well, you got a ways to go here at 158.75. Also, what's interesting about the Dollar General here, going to in its report, it did have a down day. But it had a green bar open right near its low of the session. 54.98 was your open, 54.80 low, 58, and then you ended up rallying nicely. So despite the news in Dollar Tree, market was smart yesterday buying this up. But I give that 169, 170 a good resistance level for DG.
Well, Chaikin gave us a retail name earlier with Ralph Lauren. We had a different retailer report earnings this morning. And I guess the mall, not all mall stocks are dead, because Dick's Sporting Goods reported earnings this morning and crushed it out of the park. $3.85 beat the $3.35 estimate. Sales came in at $3.87 billion, beat the $3.8 billion estimates. Dick's. Ticker DKS trading at all-time highs this morning.
Wow.
Great name for a store, but
do you own this? Is this your store?
Rashid used to, so my buddy at Rashid's like, is that your dad's store? I was like, yeah, that was my dad's store.
It's not, well, it's not mall. It is standalone. But
dad's store.
Yeah, I like it. I mean,
where I'm from, all the you know, the only Dick's Sporting Goods we had was connected to the mall. Is that not the case?
There are always strip malls. Yeah, and the strip malls usually.
Okay.
Were yours an actual, like, inside, walk around the inside mall? I already ever seen
Yeah,
strip
ours
malls.
Was in the, yeah, in the St. Louis, the West County Mall. Yeah.
Really?
It's been an unbelievable stock. I mean, you think about since really what has kickstarted Dick's was COVID. And it hasn't stopped since. It's like people started doing activities and outdoor stuff, and they never stopped. And I mean, really unbelievable when you think about Dick's here, where we came from, you know, where for years Dick's Sporting Goods was just kind of there. If you go back to the long-term charts, 2017 going leaking down, 18, 19, 20, we started to fall off. And then they realized, whoa, wait, people are going to start doing outdoor activities again. And since then, Dick's Sporting Good at the, you know, we're at the lows of COVID, it was $13 a share.
Oh.
Just quietly up about 1,500% since those lows. It's been an unbelievable mover ever since. Never stopped.
And the decline that they had, I remember this in last year, it was off decent reports too. I mean, it was, I don't know what it was. I mean, it was guidance. I don't know. I can't remember what it was. We'll have to, I know I've talked to Wedbush analysts about this one quite a bit. Maybe I'll dial him up to get his thoughts. But it was like, why are they, like, there's one reason they took us down to almost triple digits. You talk about a psychological number, $100. Now you only got to 104.63. I mean, you got to think about 197. Pre-market high 198.50. You got to think about 200. I don't know when there's no resistance. There's no resistance. Buyers came in here right around unchanged in the S&Ps. So, man, it, you know, another hot number. Not quite the wicked rebound that we
and,
had.
And IWM too, and TLT rebound here too. I mean, what is that? TLT just would tick green. I mean, are we just ignoring the inflation data and we're at a point raising rates anyways? So they're not raising rates and they're going to go and they're going to start lowering regardless. Are we at that point where we all of a sudden aren't caring as much about the inflation data? It's shocking. You get two data points this week, both hot, and the market's shrugging it off. Are we have that much FOMO here that we don't care? Do we have to actually wait till Powell says, well, we're going to think about
change my mind.
I changed my mind again. I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that they're going to be data dependent. So I think the data we've gotten so far this week shows a hot economy, but not hot enough to warrant those rate cuts or rate hikes now. But that could change depending on it, on how hot this data continues to be. Dennis, like your point, you don't think inflation's going to go ramping back up to where it was. I don't either, but it's.
I think they just cook the books. If, you know, it starts ramping up, they just change the way it's calculated like they have for eternity. You know, we know that. You know, inflation has never went away. Let's be honest here. I've been of the opinion, I tweet it out all the time. Inflation has always been here. This 2% number they talk about is an absolute joke. I mean, that we were have 2% all these years is just flat out BS. You know, it's really, I mean, we know if they calculated it the way they did 25 years ago, multiple papers on this, folks, it would be about 6 ticks higher. So when it's 2%, it's really about 8%. When it's 9%, it's really about 17% or even higher than that. So these 2-3% numbers we're talking about, we're still kicking 8-9%. Don't kid yourself here. It's just they don't calculate it all the way that they used to. But I mean, you know, that's all we can do is be data dependent. It's what the Fed looks at as stock traders. We look at those numbers here too. And it is ticking higher to your point here, Aaron. It's amazing the reaction so far. It's so far so good.
Yeah, and I mean, Jay Rice pointed this out to me the other day, just about how, you know, inflation really is compounding. So if it was up 10% last year, and they say, okay, it's up 2% from, you know, this point last year, that's going based off where we were at when it was more than 10%. So it kind of, saying 2% year over year doesn't give you the full picture because you were from an elevated point already. Yes. And so that's what, you know, I talk to a lot of people that are saying like, look, things are still way too expensive. Then they turn on the news and it says, oh, inflation's gone, you know, and it's frustrating. But again, you got to go with what the market cares about. And clearly
prices are still continuing to go higher than 2%. Like if we just stopped and prices just stayed right where they are, but they haven't, you know, and I know they're going to, you know, there's going to be an economist that comes on and say, what are you talking about? We have the data to show it. The data lies, folks. The data lies. You know, we can just take, objectively speaking, you know, the shrinkflation, which, you know, we did have Blue on there and he says they calculate it, but I read that report and the calculation that they have put in for shrinkflation is 0.01% per year. That was right from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. 0.01% a year is what they estimate shrinkflation to be. Do you know what 0.01%? That's 1% over the course of 100 years. They're saying 100 years ago, your Kit Kat bar has shrunk 1%. That is flat out, you know, one, there's two possibilities there. One, and I've said this before, one, they're lying to us, or two, they're completely incompetent in the way they calculate shrinkflation. Shrinkflation is real, folks. It is a hell of a lot more than 0.01% a year. But the statistics that you see in your data are calculating shrinkflation to be 0.01% per year. That is means nothing. Basically, they say shrinkflation doesn't exist. Well, if they say shrinkflation doesn't exist, what else are you screwing up in those calculations? So the calculations are just bogus. The CPI number is a bogus number. It's made up. It's made you feel okay about yourself that prices aren't going up as much as they really are. But they are, folks. We're telling you the truth here right now. Prices are going up a hell of a lot more than 2%. So you can say compounding. I would take compounding. If we're going to go 2%, I'll take the current prices and they'll only be up 2% over the course of the next year. But that doesn't happen. They're up more than that. They just lie to us.
Yeah, and again, we got to go with, you know, what the how the market's interpreting it too, and clearly for whatever reason, you know, shaking it off and saying that look, it's, I mean, have the Qs started to dip any more than we were, you know, 5 minutes ago? Are we still trading higher, Joel?
Yeah, we're up about 40. Dennis, was there not much reaction in the stocks because you came back pretty quickly as opposed to the
CPI? Yeah, they sold off a bit, Joel, but it was a muted response. If you would have saw TLT tanking 1% and IWM falling over 1%, I would have left and they not probably came back. But it was a muted response. I mean, look at where we are. The S&P is down about 40 cents from where we were going. We're down about 4 points. We got a hot number. Aaron's right. We got a hot number here. And the S&P sold off 4 points. The IWM's down a little bit more, but we're down 0.07%. We're only up. So we sold off 0.3% on the IWM. That's what a hot number gives us here now. Holy crap. If you're bearish, if you've got this, like, you know, markets are going to tank, inflation's going to come back, this is not the reaction you want to see, because this was not a good number. And the market is taking it in the stride.
Right, I just want to give a shout out. We just got a ton of people on Twitter watching us today. So if you guys got any symbols that you got want to take a look at, just tweet at Aaron or tweet at Benzinga, and we'll try and cover those issues. But got a big crowd out there. Say hi to all the Twitter folks out
there. I did see, while we were talking about Dick Sporting Goods, someone in the chat, I hope they're still here, was asking about the golf stocks, which I actually was looking at these the other day, and it was just interesting because you have a lot of divergence there, where Callaway, ticker MODG, has been getting absolutely beat up compared to, I'm probably going to mispronounce this, but Acushnet Holdings, which is ticker Golf, G-O-L-F, has been doing pretty well. It's one of those things where you got to pick the right companies in an industry. Yeah. And
market's waking up a little bit, folks. Watch your bids there. They're starting to have a little bit of a change of heart here. Well, we're approaching the low area. The low on that dip was 52.39. We're coming back to that area. So it looks like some of the big boys are getting to their desks and saying, man, you know that, wow.
That's a hot number.
That's a hot number. I want to say one thing about golf. It's just, there's no Tiger. I mean, who are the big names out there?
It's,
you know,
it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then this LIV Golf, you guys all know, you know, I wrote my article, what I think about that. But like, who do you like? Like, who's your, like, who do you want to tune in to watch in the Masters? You know, I mean, Scheffler, I mean, it's sport. Now you got young, the young Tiger Woods. What's his,
Charlie. Charlie's coming up. But I think Tiger's going to be playing in the Masters this year.
He can't even get around the course.
But I think the story here with these golf
I feel shy for him.
I know. He looks like he can barely make it through a round. And Callaway, ticker MODG, made this big investment into Topgolf and entertainment and during COVID. And I think the market has punished the company for that because they may have overpaid for that deal, and could explain why you've seen some divergence. I just looked at some of the numbers. Callaway is down more than 37% over the last year. While golf, Acushnet Holdings, which owns Titleist, FootJoy, these other brands, is up more than 26% over the last year. So you're seeing huge divergence in those two names. And I'd always rather stick to the winners, the ones that are doing well, but maybe there's some value to come in at Callaway at some point. I mean, these are both huge brands. I just don't think they're going away anytime soon. But like you said, I mean, the story just might not be there. It might not be as sexy as a play as it was during COVID when you had
seasonality. Yeah, I know why Callaway's down, because I haven't been playing much golf, and they're always the Callaway balls are always on sale, and I get those. And you know why? Because I just, like, boom, I hit it in the creek, boom, you know, or hit it so far. I'm just dropping, taking
the ball's designed to go in the ditch, so you got to buy more of them.
Well, no, it's me hitting it in a ditch, but
yeah,
I just
hit them,
like,
in the ditch too.
They're cheap. I mean, I'm always in the fairway. If I'm on number seven, I'm in number eight fairway or number six.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to do that.
Yeah, my golf game, I'm yelling four half the time. It's horrible. But, you know, one thing just talking about the golf stocks here is seasonality is going to come into play here. And we're coming into, you know, just that time where people start thinking about golf and they start thinking about golf stocks. So I think, you know, you got the MODG that if that could get above 15, it gets really interesting here. You don't want to be early, but you're not really early. It's spring, you know, there's no snow outside.
Masters,
I'm up in the snow belt. There's no snow out here. People are starting to think about golf here. So the timing for the golf trade is actually right about now. Typically, and, you know, we could look back at charts and you can do some data on this. I never do data or anything like that. I just kind of figure
it out.
We
don't need data here.
Yeah.
It's all about your charts.
We're not data dependent. We're just seasonality dependent. I think golf stocks
could
perform well in the next couple months.
You're so serious in the intro. It's all about the execution style.
Yeah.
I don't even remember when I said that. It's true.
Yeah, when did you say that, man? You're like,
I don't know.
I don't know. I see some people in the chat talking about Tesla. It looks like we had a little bit of a reversal on Tesla this morning.
Oh, nice.
Stock was trading down another 1.5% when we started the show. Now in the green. But I mean, again, like the stock has just been so weak. I like to stay away from weak stocks until it gives me a little bit of a sign that we're turning around and on an uptrend. But I don't know if, well, I guess we'll see if today could be that day for Tesla, that it comes out and outperforms the market, outperforms the other Magnificent Seven stocks, because it certainly hasn't over the past few weeks.
It is more analysts, UBS lowering the price target here. I mean, it's Tesla, right? And so there's always, you know, there's always these rebounds in it. Boom, boom, we're down 18 cents, but were we lower? Boom, 169.
We were down $2 here. So yeah. We have popped back here. We've been doing the show live here. So if you know the reason, let us know here. I don't see anything popping out at me on the headlines, but I'm sure there's going to be something.
Yep. All right, we've got about 5 minutes left. Again, if anyone from Twitter or YouTube has any stocks they want us to check out, let us
know. How about some from Twitter? Are you can you check the tweet it at, or tweet at Dennis? Or okay. Tweet. I want a Twitter. I want.
Did we just start doing the show live on Twitter here too? Did we just start this? Like, because we always do it everywhere, but I noticed that we're doing it live on Twitter here now. When did we start that?
We've been doing it live on Twitter for a little bit, but recently in the past few weeks, we've been getting a lot more
People are finding us on Twitter.
Yeah.
So yeah. We're on contract highs here.
We got the Musk algorithm going for us now.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, also I have to do some research, you know, Jim Rome, the Jim Rome show, you know who he is.
He's
on Twitter. He's moving his show over to Twitter.
All right, we got one from Rugpull Randy. I hope you're not one.
Rugpull Randy!
I love that name.
I hope you're not the one doing the pulling, Randy, but he wants to look at Palantir. You know, I haven't checked in Palantir since they reported a couple weeks ago and got that big pop up to $30. Let's see. Oh, back down to 25, it looks like.
Rugpull Randy, were you listening to the show a couple days ago when it had the big pop? Because I gave a number. And I said, this is not a daily number. It's not a weekly number. It's a monthly number. Who remembers? Dennis, I know you don't remember. I gave one number.
I don't remember yesterday or 6 minutes ago.
Come on.
Memory. 6 minute memory here, man.
Jay has it. Jay, check the notes from a couple days ago. I'll give you 5 seconds and then I will give it to you. 47. Not 47. I know you love to see 47.
That's a nice number on Palantir.
I said 27. The $27 area. The reason is because you had not one, but two monthly highs. If all you Twitter people are going to learn anything, is I love when you go historically, go farther out, look at your monthlies. Your high in October of 21, 26.75. Your high in November, 27.11. That's a double top on the monthly to me. You did get to 27.50 the other day, but you did not close above 27. So I like to see a little bit of a base here, maybe a couple days hanging here and rally back. But it's very important for Palantir to get a rebound here to take back at least half of this move. That would take it back to like the $26 area, 26.10, 26 and a quarter, and then get up there and challenge the high of the move. Rugpull Randy was listening, so good. All right.
I'm on the side where Palantir's got a hold. Yes, 2 days ago low, 24.35. We start leaking here, and it looks tired to me. I still think the AI trade is on, so we're at the crossroads here. Not going to make a call on it here today. Below 24, you got to go on this. So if you're long Palantir, you can hold it. You got to cut out if this starts cutting down below 24, because then it's going to be a break of trend. The stock is at a nosebleed valuation, and the story is cooling off for some of the other AI stocks. So just be cautious here with your Palantir position.
Got it. I see some other people in the chat asking, oh, wow, so someone's spamming NVIDIA. Please don't comment, you know, the same thing too many times, or we'll have to put you in a little timeout. We'll have to put you in the penalty box. We've been talking a lot about.
I talk NVIDIA so much anyways. I'll allow it.
We've talked about hockey already today. But
look at this. I got a number for you. I gave you a number yesterday, and I don't know if you saw it. It was that all-time high, but right now. I mean, you got a pair of highs. I call it very important for this to get to 917 today. That splits the high from the last two sessions. So for a, you know, $900 stock, two highs within $4, pretty good area there. As far as support goes, I mean, if you lose this 84.35 area, I don't know. Next daily low is 61.50. But right now, resistance easier to identify than support in NVIDIA.
All right, last one, and we'll wrap up the show. We got to talk. We got to talk some Hood, Robinhood. I'm sure that's where a lot of people are buying Palantir and NVIDIA on Robinhood, right? And Hood reported some very strong user numbers from February. I assume that has to do a lot with the crypto trading on the platform. But yeah, if you were coming in and buying Hood when it got down to $9-$10, you've been rewarded greatly here. Now trading up 10% this morning. Close to $19 a share.
Remember all those analysts went to sell on this thing at like $7, Dennis?
Yeah,
remember that?
They're all wrong.
We
talked about this as the, like I said, at a certain point in time that just the client base, they have so many clients, I don't even care how much money they made, that it would be a target at a certain point in time. Mm-hmm. Now it's come back up and it's probably not a target at these prices, but it was getting down to $5-$6. Somebody's going to come scoop it up just to get all the clients. I mean, now it's 18, 19. It's been an impressive run. What a run. I mean, February, beginning of February, $10. You're up 90% in the course of about 6 weeks. That's impressive. That's a huge move.
Trading up today, I saw the news after the close. I think it was about funds. They picked up some more assets. It's probably because everyone's crypto portfolio makes a surge after the close. And that was it announced some monthly metrics.
Yeah, February user numbers were very, very strong for Robinhood.
Net
deposits, $3.6 billion.
Okay. This is, let me get the pre-market high in there, and I'll give you, that would be a potential target for the Hood today. 1946 stands as your pre-market high. We've leaked 50 cents of it. We haven't been up in this area since early 2022 when we made a high at 1894. So right there, right now, if that was your target, $19 from January, you got it right now in Robinhood.
All right. Well, that'll be a wrap for us today. We got that slider, that hotter than expected inflation data, but the market appears to be shrugging it off still. Similar story to Tuesday so far. We'll see how this plays out today. Thank you for everyone who tuned in on Benzinga's pre-market prep here on YouTube and also over on Twitter. We will have live trading starting up right after this. Any final thoughts for the day, guys?
More chop. We thought chop yesterday. I'm going to stick with the choppy theme here today. I think you'll see some separation. IWM has continued its leak. You're starting to see a little bit of separation here. TLT has leaked down too. I don't know what it was doing ticking green about 20 minutes ago. It has kind of continued to leak here as well. The number's not great, so I think you see that separation. I wouldn't be surprised if the AI trade starts to come back because money managers coming in saying, oh, inflation down a little bit hot. I'm going to stay away from my small caps. I'm going with AI today. So NVIDIA is trading down here in the pre-market. I wouldn't be surprised if you start to see some of these other AI stocks start to get a lift if, you know, this trend continues. It's all about rotation. This market's all about rotation.
As for me, I mean, I'm just keeping out the all-time closing high price, 52.41 and a quarter. That's been bid. It's been bid all morning here. So as long as you stay above that area, bulls are in control. And pre-market high, 53 and a half. Quad Witch tomorrow will have CC, CC Legator on to talk about what's going on in the option markets. Thanks to everyone all contributing on YouTube, also contributing on Twitter up there. We are now at contract highs in Twitter, man. Look at that. Wow. All right, everyone, have a safe day out there. We'll be back with you to cover that Quad Witch tomorrow. Oh, also, hey, Twitter people. The closing print, 3:30, premarketprep.com. Dennis will be joining me there talking about the setups, what he saw during the day, and how he is going into that Quad Witch expiration. So thanks again, everybody.